CITR Radio would like to remind you that this program is a three-dimensional color presentation. For quality sound and vivid imagery, please use your CITR 3D earplugs.
Hello, listeners. I hope you are doing well. You are now hearing CITR Docs Season 2. This is a broadcast from CITR 101.9 FM, located on the ancestral and unceded territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people. Last week, we opened with two documentaries, one on indigenous food sovereignty and the other on catfishing. Over the next few weeks, we are going to hear documentaries about activism at the UBC campus, the dynamics of alt-right groups in Vancouver, and more. These documentaries are being uploaded on Mondays and Wednesdays, and the easiest way to get them, just look up CITR Documentary on iTunes or Stitcher. If you like what you're hearing, please subscribe. For more information on upcoming docs and profiles of the producers, you can visit citr.ca/docs. Over the next half an hour, you're going to hear something very special. There's a documentary called Lamo and the Princess. It's produced by Alex DeBoer and Kunsang Kyairong. It is about the relationship of two women who met in pre-occupation Tibet. I believe I heard Alex call it a dark fairy tale, and definitely there is a lot of emotional resonance in this tale, but at the same time, the relationship it explores is so particular and unique to the Tibetan cultural context that specific English words and understandings may not suffice to capture it. To get a glimpse, an idea, stay tuned for Lamo and the Princess.
I see them often in Vancouver. Green, yellow, red, white, and blue squares of cloth, strung together, hung in windows and on patios and doorways. Inside the colored cloth, a Tibetan script is written, though few in Vancouver can read it. My friend Tenzin Sering, who happens to be Tibetan, says that when she was a kid, she thought only Tibetans hung prayer flags. When she would visit Vancouver with her mom, she'd point to prayer flags around the city, assuming happily that other Tibetans lived in those homes. But her mom would say, no, those are just hippies. Tenzin and I have been visiting someone in a house with Tibetan prayer flags hanging above the front door, though the people who live here are actually Tibetan.
Should we start?
Yeah.
This one. Tell us your name, age, and where you were born.
That's Tenzin, talking with Lamo, the woman we've been visiting. They tend to slip back and forth between English and Tibetan. Lamo is in her early 70s. She's small, maybe less than 5 feet in height, always wearing her black and gray hair pulled back out of her face, which keeps attention on her wide, bright smile, and she smiles often. Tenzin and I sit on Lamo's living room floor in her Vancouver home. She and her husband have lived in this house for decades. They raised 4 kids here. The living room where we chat is filled with statues, Buddhist images, and framed photos. I ask Lamo to describe them.
There's my family. There's a lot of Lama's picture. Left side, there's a Buddha statue. That's from Buddh Gaya. That's a holy place. Then there's another Lama, he's a very famous Gamapa Rinpoche.
A Rinpoche is a Buddhist spiritual leader. Buddhism is an inseparable part of Tibetan culture, though Lamo is especially devout. Her home has prayer flags, sure, but it also has photos of famous Lamas and Rinpoche. It has Buddhist pictures, known as tankas, and statues brought back from pilgrimages to India. She even has a prayer room. It's just down the hall from where we sit.
And I have lots of tanka in my prayer room, my favorite room. I'm not praying myself. I'm praying for everybody. And everybody have a good life. Everybody have a good educate. And I pray like that all the time.
Today, Lamo is content with her life. Her four children have grown up healthy and educated. She has a husband, friends. She's part of a Tibetan dance group and goes for long walks. But things weren't always like this. Lamo prays for others, that they're met with compassion and kindness, that they have a better life than she's had. I'm Alex DeBoer. This is Lamo and the Princess.
I'm 73 years old. I was born in Lhasa.
Lamo was born and raised in a town outside of Lhasa, the capital city and province of Tibet. Although Tibet has been annexed by China, when Lamo was born in 1944, it was still a sovereign land.
Can you describe your hometown for us?
It's beautiful. It's not a big place. And then my family has a lot of field, like wheat and barley and radish, the big radish, white big radish. They plant that too.
Lamo tells us about her childhood, how she used to sell potatoes and hay in Lhasa with her father.
I am his favorite daughter. I go with him all the time. And if he's a little bit drunk, he cries, right? And I remember this, when he cry, I cry with him. No reason. And all my other sister and my mom look at them. They look like the same, both crying. They say like that, tease me.
It must have been very hard for your dad when you got chosen and had to leave.
Yeah.
Lamo had a happy childhood, but at the age of 12, it was cut short. Here's a snapshot of the social structure Lamo grew up in. To quote Tibetan scholar Melvin Goldstein, Tibet was characterized by a form of institutionalized inequality that can be called pervasive serfdom. Tibet was a theocracy, and all Tibetan lay people belonged in one of two categories. There were gerpa, who were sort of like lords or aristocrats, and miser, who were like serfs. Miser were bound to the land estates they worked on. The gerpa who owned their land collected taxes and would sometimes take miser away from their families to work directly for them as bonded laborers.
So when you were living in Tibet, can you tell us a bit about the class system and what you understood of the class system at that time?
I always think myself, I have to be really good. Otherwise, my parents will get trouble. Always remember that.
That before?
Lamo and her family were part of the miser class, and so they could be chosen to work as unpaid servants for the Gerpa family who presided over their town.
They won't choose you. They can choose you, they can choose you, they can choose anybody they can choose. And that's why I was saying to myself, please don't choose me, I can't work good. My aunt is very good worker, I hope they will choose her. I prayed that, but they choose me, because the Lama prayed, they read the prayer book. My name is this, and she was born this year, and the aunt was born this time. Her name is this. How old she? And that all their type, they will look in the prayer book, and then they choose me.
According to her town's spiritual leader, Lamo was prophesied as the most auspicious choice to become a nanny for the Gerpa family who owned her land. Lamo was 12 years old. The year was 1956.
Could you tell me a little bit about the family that you worked for?
Family. Oh, dear.
Lamo was primarily responsible for serving one woman and helping take care of her five children. When speaking with Tenzin and I, she refers to this woman only as her boss.
How old is she now?
She must be 85, 90. She's very beautiful.
Really?
Inside the rod and how she says things, very mean. She had a long hair, this long. She sits sometimes on her hair, and the body is so beautiful. I wash her, and I dress her too. Can you imagine? I was so young.
Lamo's boss was so beautiful that when they would walk together in Lhasa, people would stop and congratulate Lamo on how privileged she was to even be near her.
You're so lucky, they say. And I can't say anything I think you don't know.
What people didn't know was that Lamo, who was herself still a child, was working night and day to take care of her boss's five children, and her boss wasn't always very kind. Lamo tells us about a time she was instructed to step into the bathroom.
Soon as in the bathroom, she hit me. No reason. She must have met somebody else. It just hit me.
I just asked to, why don't you say your boss's name? Are you protecting her identity, or you just don't want to, or?
Right now?
Or just generally, no. When you talk about her, We've never heard you say her name. We're just wondering why that is.
Usually, you don't say their name.
Lamo explains just that in old Tibet, Miser wouldn't address Gerpa by their real names, out of respect.
What did you call her then?
Jamjukusha.
What does that mean?
That means princess.
And so, Lamo continued serving the beautiful princess. She turned 13 years old, then 14, still without seeing her family, until one spring afternoon.
That day she said, tomorrow you can go home. That day only I have one day off.
In honor of a religious holiday, Lamo was allowed to return home for her first day off in years. She wasted no time.
Usually there's a walk path, but I didn't go with the path. I ran, just wanted to get home faster. And whole night I didn't sleep, talk and cry.
Did you ever think about running away?
Not in Tibet. That time, I don't think we have a knowledge to run away.
With no plan to escape and nowhere to escape to, Lamo's life would have gone on like this indefinitely. But as the year 1959 approached, radical change was coming to Tibet, and it would alter Lamo's life forever.
Speaking in Tibetan,
this is His Holiness the Dalai Lama, addressing journalists in India in March of 1959. The Chinese army opened fire on Tibetans in Lhasa just weeks earlier, killing thousands and solidifying control over Tibet. In reaction, the Dalai Lama fled and took refuge in India, where many Tibetans would soon join him.
I'm sure they know Tibet was taking over.
They said it was a pilgrimage?
Yeah, but we never did go pilgrimage. I'm sure this day I'm thinking, that time I don't know. This day I was thinking, they know.
About a year after the Dalai Lama fled Tibet, Lamo was invited to join the princess and her family on a 2-month pilgrimage to India. Lamo, who was 15 years old and unaware of the strengthening Chinese occupation, agreed to go with the princess.
And if I stay home, probably I'm gone long time ago.
Lamo's decision to go with the princess might have saved her life. In 1960, Chairman Mao's army was using force to consolidate power. The princess had disguised an escape plan as a pilgrimage, and Lamo didn't realize Tibet had been captured by China until she had already arrived in northern India.
She was working in the nursery school too, right?
Yeah.
Why did she work there? Because wasn't she a wealthy woman?
Yeah, but husband is not there, and I guess no money, probably. I don't know. And she worked there, and I work, and her sister worked there.
As Tibetans fled into India from occupied Tibet, Gerpa and Miser people found themselves living and working together as a community in exile. The princess, who had never worked a day in her life, was now forced to work side by side with Lamo in a nursery school.
I tried to let her do stuff, cleaning stuff, but I do the dirty stuff because she doesn't have those experience. I tried to really nice to her, but she still hit me.
And on Lamo's one day off every week,
I wash her clothes. She has nice clothes, silk blouse and stuff. I wash by hand, I iron them, and deliver her. And now I think I'm so stupid myself, why I did that.
Although sometimes in India, the princess could be kind.
Then she will do something nice to me at that time. She'll take me Hindi movies, and then we have a dinner together. That's a very nice thing she did to me.
But her moments of kindness could sour.
One time is, she gave me one blouse, Tibetan blouse, and somehow, I don't know, she's mad or something. I want that blouse back, she said. I said, okay. I gave it back. And she gave it to her sister's maid. We lived together. She gave it to her. That was really hurt me.
This kind of cruelty affected Lamo deeply.
I always think I'm nothing, like a dirt.
Lamo continued serving the princess until she was 19 years old. By this time, she had been with the princess for 7 years. In 1971, the princess moved to Toronto after being accepted into Canada's Tibetan Refugee Resettlement Program. Soon after, Lamo and her new husband and children immigrated to Vancouver, British Columbia, under the same resettlement program. 4 provinces apart, Lamo and the princess belonged to Canada's Tibetan population of only a few hundred, but chose not to communicate.
So when she was in Toronto for most of her life in Canada, did you ever talk to her?
When she lived in Toronto, I never phoned. She didn't phone me either. And I guess that she came here, then we talk. And I see her, and she comes to my house.
After 4 decades of silence, Lamo and the princess began to see each other again. The cause of their reunion was the princess's daughter, who had become ill and happened to live near Lamo in Vancouver. When the princess came to visit her daughter, she also started visiting Lamo.
How often would you guys call on the, like, talk on the phone, or would she visit you?
When she comes to Vancouver, she called me, I'm here. Then I go there, bake something or make momo, I take there. And I don't take my kids with me. No, they wouldn't want me to go there. They don't know I visit her.
Lamo didn't think her four children would understand her relationship with the princess, especially when her friends didn't seem to.
They're all saying to me, why are you still nice to her? She did to you, that's bad, and you shouldn't be nice to her. Never respect for her. But I don't know, I still talk to her. She's so nice to me and see me and she hugs me. And then I had to respond that I can't be like this. I just can't.
So she was nice to you?
Yeah.
But you would still serve her, but she was just nicer than she used to
be. In Canada.
Oh,
in Canada?
Yeah. Much better.
Much better.
Yeah.
Now reunited, the princess asked Lamo to address her by her real name. But somehow, Lamo couldn't. Far from Tibet and her life of servitude, Lamo still couldn't break free.
She was saying, doesn't matter. You say my name, his name, it's okay. I could not say it because this mind is rotten mind. I cannot say a boss's name. Still, Jamjukusho, all the time in my mouth, Jamjukusho. I can't say her name at all. Never said.
A few years went by like this, the princess occasionally visiting Lamo in Vancouver, Lamo baking the princess food and doting on her. Their past was left undisturbed and unhealed until one afternoon when the princess once again asked Lamo to step into the bathroom with her.
I thought, what she's going to say? And then she said, I didn't do nice to you, and but I still love you, and I want to still friend with you, but if it's you don't want to be a friend, it's okay with me. And that's she said. And then I said, I still love you, but why are you so mean to me? I have no relative, nobody. I got only you.
Lamo and the princess cried together and spoke honestly about their feelings. The princess said she behaved the way she did because her parents taught her to treat servants that way. But Lamo wasn't sure if she could accept that. She ended up leaving the princess's request for friendship and forgiveness unanswered.
She had 5 kids and she had a miserable life, I think. That's why very anger in there. Nobody else take it, and she gives me that. I think that's in our Buddhist way, it's very good for me. But somehow I didn't forgive her, but we talked that time, and that's it. I think that's good. Because when I see her, I'm not comfortable with my kids.
And do you miss her at all?
No.
Do you feel better?
It's okay. I miss the kids, her kids.
Since their conversation in the bathroom 3 years ago, Lamo and the princess haven't seen each other. And Lamo has never called the princess by her real name. produced and written by Alex DeBoer and Tenzin Sering. Research and editing by Alex DeBoer. Translation by Tenzin Sering. Song from Lhasa, performed by Chindin Kerong and Tsepak Wangmo. Other music by Ben Sound. Special thanks to Sering Shakya, Alexander Kim, Jonathan Q, Lamo and her family.
You just heard a documentary from Alex DeBoer and Kunsang Kyerong. Thank you for that incredible story. And if you're interested in hearing more from them about the subjects explored in this tale, keep an eye out. I hear there's something on the horizon. This is airing as a part of CITR Doc Season 2 and Lamo and the Princess, which you just heard is the third documentary to make its way online. If you want to hear anything else that we have done thus far, go to our Stitcher and iTunes pages. Just look up CITR Docs. Thank you again to Alex and Kunsang. And thank you to CRFC Radio Meters, who in part provide the funding for this project. On Wednesday, we're going to have another piece about migration diaspora. It's from producer Rachel Lau. It's called What's in a Name? Here's a sneak peek.
My last name, it was Beidou. My grandpa, back in Ghana, he was swimming. And Ghana has this, like, really big... I guess they're really big on fishing and everything like that. So everyone usually goes by the water, they're swimming, they're doing their thing. And this guy, I guess he like drifted too far when he was swimming. And he ended up like, you know, he was drowning and someone saw him and ended up saving his life. And that person's last name was Badu. So my grandpa switched his last name to Badu, B-A-D-U.